It happened in the most unlikely of places, where teachers in Arizona, West Virginia, Oklahoma, organized by the hundreds of thousands and won under Republican regimes. So I think it's that type of confidence in working people and confidence that even if things are hard today, we need to have confidence that people are going to eventually fight back. That is how I sort of wake up in the morning and don't just fall to despair. And it's not always easy. And I think there's easier days and harder days. But I think ultimately working people do have the power to transform the world, whether it's under Trump or anybody else. And so we need to get involved in that and make that happen.
Well, thank you so much, Professor Eric Blanc. Can you remind us where we can follow you and your work and where we can find your book?
Yeah, the easiest way to follow my work is to sign up for my Substack, which is Labor Politics. So if you go to Labor Politics online, I think it's laborpolitics.com, you can find my Substack, and I publish there a lot. And then the book is also very easy to find. Just Google We Are the Union with my last name. It's by UC Press, and you can pre-order it now, and it'll be out mid-February.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Eric Blanc, Assistant Professor of Labor Studies and Employment Relations at Rutgers University and author of We Are the Union: How Worker-to-Worker Organizing is Revitalizing Labor and Winning Big. Thank you so much for being on Law and Disorder.
Thanks for having me.
Visit us online at lawanddisorder.org for archived programs and links to many of the issues we discuss. That's lawanddisorder.org.
The forces of the gathering authoritarian storm in our country are evident in many ways. It is manifesting itself in powerful and continuing nationalism, in disdain for human rights, in the entwinement of government and religion, in a controlled mass media, in the protection of corporate power and the suppression of labor power, and in the encouragement of violence. The power of labor has been channeled into the Democratic and Republican parties, the twin parties of capitalism. We need a workers' party, but we don't even have the nucleus of one. Race and gender are formative in the building of authoritarian regimes. We see this in the USA. Haitians who are black have been accused of eating cats and dogs. Women's rights to control their own bodies is under attack from the Supreme Court on down, and women are marked as childless cat ladies and told to stay home and bear children. We speak today with Diane Feely on race and gender as formative in building authoritarian regimes and the potential power of our labor movement long buried in the clutches of the Democratic and Republican parties. Diane Feely is an editor of the magazine Against the Current. She's a leader of Solidarity, a socialist feminist organization. Diane lives in Detroit, where she's been an activist for many years in the United Automobile Workers Union. Diane Feely, welcome to Law and Disorder.
Thanks.
Diane, Chris Hedges, our previous guest, who inaugurated our series on fascism, what it is and how to fight it, is of the opinion that labor has to be central to protecting ourselves and to fight back. Why is this so?
Well, I agree with Chris on this. First of all, the membership of a union is diverse. And since we live in a highly segregated society in terms of where we live, the kinds of schools we go to, it's really the most diverse place we will be in. And we're there for quite a while every week. Not only is it a diverse place where people of all opinions, of various races and ethnicities and genders all work. And what is our job? What is the idea of a union? A union is not an insurance company. It's a membership organization. And therefore, it's about what we want in terms of our wages, our working conditions, our benefits. So we're concerned about the quality of our life, the security of our life, not only at our workplace, but also in our communities. So it's a very social place to be. And it's also a very democratic or potentially democratic place where we have to listen to each other, where we get to debate and discuss and decide what our priorities are. So all of this really teaches us solidarity, not only with who are our co-workers, but other people, because we can't just be concerned about our own selves. We live in this larger world. So that sense of solidarity, that sense that we are all human, operates against the idea of fascism, where only some are humans and others are subhumans. So it's really a very important institution in our society to really develop ourselves as human beings. So the potential of democracy through the unions, of course, can have a big impact, not only on our jobs and our communities, but in a broader sense in our world and how we organize ourselves.
Diane, historically, the trade union movement in the United States has taken the pragmatic position of rewarding your friends and punishing your enemies. Sometimes they've supported the Democrats, therefore, and sometimes the Republicans. But what has been the result, do you think, of this pragmatism? I mean, after all, the wages of workers in America have not gone up in real terms for, 50 years? And now we see a growing fascist movement, which is enjoying historic support among many sections of the working class. So how do you assess the consequences of this traditional union pragmatism?
I think it shows how so much of what we've learned in school and in our society and even in some unions is actually wrong and not helpful to us. We are taught that, I remember in grammar school learning that if you didn't like the situation in your country, you voted out the party that was in power for the other party. That is, it was a two-party system. And also a great focus on the individual candidate rather than on the structure. What's the structure of our society and how can we make that structure better meet our needs? So in terms of the unions, I think a lot of the concessions were sold on the basis that they were absolutely necessary for our jobs. I mean, I retired as an auto worker, and I had the opportunity of debating this issue. Would it save our jobs if we accepted two-tier wages? And my argument and my organizing was, no, it did not, that in fact it would just bring more concessions. But this is what we're told, that the concessions are necessary because the auto, in this case, it was the auto industry, is going through restructuring, outsourcing, or automation, and that we just had to bite the bullet until times became better. But of course, they never became better because we accepted the concessions. And so we have to break out of this mold and seek a different way. And I think that's something that the UAW is trying to do now, through our stand-up strike strategy that we used. So we have to develop a different perspective about how we fight for ourselves. And that includes, in my opinion, breaking with the two-party system, because it does not represent our needs, as you can see in the platform of both of the parties.
Diane Feeley, what's going on in the Teamsters Union? It's one of the most powerful unions in the country. The president of the Teamsters Union, Sean O'Brien, addressed the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee. He spoke admiringly of Trump, calling him a tough son of a bitch. He got wild applause. The union then took a neutral position in the upcoming election, but a majority of the members of his union say they support Trump, and Trump wants to get rid of unions. How do you explain all of this?
Well, first of all, I don't think a majority of the membership of the union does support Trump, although I think probably a good portion, maybe a third or even a little bit more, supports Trump because they see him as an alternative to the neoliberal policies that have existed, that both Democrats and Republicans have carried out. It's really sad when some people who see this racist, hierarchical guy as some kind of an alternative. But I think that's really what they see. Many of them say, well, I may not agree with him on reproductive rights. I may not agree with him about this, that, or the other thing. But when he was in power, the economy was in better shape. As if the economy has very much to do with who's president of the United States in a capitalist society. So I think it just shows how badly educated we are. And I must say, there are sections of the Teamsters who have broken with the idea that Trump represents an alternative. I think the Black Caucus has a different position. I think there are other regional and local Teamsters who have different positions. Unfortunately, there really isn't the kind of alternative there should be, where there's another alternative to neoliberalism or the kind of neo-fascism that Trump represents on the ballot in all 50 states. Because, of course, the two-party system likes to perpetuate itself. And so that's the horrible situation that we're in.
You know, there's been a stirring of sorts, certainly in the labor movement. Currently, unionized workers in this country, including public sector workers, only about 11%. Whereas once upon a time, it was at least a third. But there's been a stirring in the movement. Amazon workers have voted to support a union. Railroad workers wanted to strike, but, well, they were prevented from doing so by the Democratic Party Biden administration. The teachers' unions in the last year, especially in West Virginia, Chicago, they've been militant. You believe that what we need is a workers' party. Currently, we barely have the nucleus of one. So, Diane, how do we get from where we are to where we have indeed a workers' party, and what might be the role of unions like those I just mentioned?
This is the big dilemma, because there are so many problems that prevent parties from emerging, whether we begin with the tremendous money that's involved and the kind of legislation that allows enormous amounts of money to prevent anything else. I see that the Green Party, even when it's been able to get all the petitions to get on the ballot, is being challenged by the Democratic Party, which just shows how undemocratic the Democratic Party is. So there are certainly all of these barriers that exist. Yet at the same time, it seems to me there's more of a sense that the two-party system is not in our interests. And therefore, kind of looking around, well, what can we do? How can we move ahead? And yet we see that the top leaders in the major unions are very wedded to the Democratic Party. So I actually think that we were set back 30 years ago when under Tony Mazzocchi, there were attempts to start a labor party, and actually 11 unions signed on, but they were afraid to move to that next step of actually beginning to run candidates. So that was a setback for us. Well, how can we move forward now where there's a greater sense that we need a party that represents us? It seems to me we've got to begin small at the local level. I know in Detroit, many of the local offices are nonpartisan offices. So I think it would be a good idea if we began to run for those nonpartisan offices, get the experience, and begin to network so that we could do this. Now, actually, the Green Party, for example, I think has something like 150 people in office, all at very local levels. So it's possible that we could begin to do this and build a much stronger network, particularly based on a union here or a union there that would be willing to begin that process. So it's a difficult struggle. And I don't have a solution at the state or national level, but I think with developing that experience at the local level, that may give us the self-confidence to move ahead.
You're listening to Law and Disorder Radio. This is Attorney Michael Smith. I'm with my longtime friend and colleague, Attorney Jim Lafferty, and we're speaking with Diane Feeley. Diane, some years ago, the great economist and socialist leader, Ernest Mandel, observed that, and this is what he said, "We're at the foot of the Himalayas without adequate tools, but we have to climb up." Would that be your assessment now?
I think so. I met Ernest Mandel a few times, and he would always ask me about the U.S. labor movement. And I would always say to him, "Well, we're down, but we're continuing to go down. So maybe at some point we'll be able to start moving up." So yes, I think that we have a long way to go, but we have such a great need to begin moving that I think we just have to start.
Diane, please talk about how Trump is using both race and gender in building his support, and how historically fascism used race and gender as well.
Yes, this is a very interesting question to see how race and gender are the building blocks for fascism. And it's amazing to see Trump and Vance present a kind of masculist line. I tried to avoid the debates, but at one point I turned on actually the Canadian news hoping that they wouldn't be showing the debate. And what they had was a man on there tearing his shirt off. And it turned out this was a wrestler who was speaking at the Republican Party convention. I thought this was the perfect example of a masculinist symbol. And I think everything that they say and do reinforces that they are strong and therefore they can lead. So we have Vance who talks about the cat ladies. We have Trump and Vance talking about how Haitians eat cats and dogs. So what is this all about? It's all about dehumanizing people, their attack on trans people. All of this is to say there's two categories of people, the humans, which are us, and the subhumans. And who are the subhumans? Well, they're all the immigrants who, of course, are illegal under their definition. They're the women who really belong at home and in the house. They're the trans people. And they don't have equal rights. In fact, Vance even says it's only parents who should have extra votes. And presumably it's people who choose or are unable to have children who should have lesser rights. So this whole way of their conducting their campaign, I think, indicates the racial and gendered categories that they use. And this is something that is common, I think, to every fascist regime. If we look at the Italian government, and I think under Mussolini, it's different than under Hitler, but it's similar in terms of choosing which categories to see as human and which not to see as human. And interestingly enough, in all of these cases, the home is seen as this romantic place in which the woman is the, I guess, the queen of the home. She doesn't have any rights, but she's there as a sort of sacrificial figure. So all of this, I would say, in terms of Italy, it was the nation, the strength of the nation. In Germany, it was different. It was the strength of the master race, because even Germans who were disabled, had mental problems, were Jewish, were black, were not considered humans. So it's only the master race that can construct the nation. So all of this is pretty sick stuff. But I think it's really about the insecurity that people have in a society that is very insecure. And certainly we're facing an economic crisis now. And that was similar to the economic crisis that was happening after World War One. And certainly that had a big impact on both Germany and Italy, as well as other countries as well. And we're seeing that same kind of authoritarianism arise now as there is this economic crisis as we go into a late stage of capitalism. In fact, I call it geriatric capitalism because it's certainly at the end of its life, and yet there is no new birth that's coming into being, and that's what's creating this frustration.
Diane Feely, let's talk about Project 2025. How do you see this as helping the forces of fascism in the USA?
Well, to me, it's like it's their wish list. They have a wish list. They put forward all the things that they would like to do, not that they would be capable of doing them. And of course, I ask, well, where is our wish list? Because our wish list would be quite different from theirs. So if we look at some of the elements, we say, okay, they want to, quote, restore the family. That doesn't mean providing parental care, reducing work hours, developing a free public education that's of quality. No, it's stopping sexual orientation. It's saying that all federal laws and regulations should be stripped of any discussion of sexual orientation, gender equality, reproductive rights, saying, okay, for the Department of Health and Human Services, there should be a definition of marriage and the family, which should be biblically based. Biblically based. Well, that's quite a narrow view. That federal agencies should be stripped of their regulatory capacity, and that all of this should be basically placed under the office of the presidency. So without all of the regulatory agencies and the regulatory power, what do we have left? We've lost, I don't know, 75 years of regulations that are very important, whether we're talking about health and safety laws, whether we're talking about minimum wages. It's all gone. Whether we talk about the environment, it's very interesting that Trump and Vance speak a lot about the fears. They appeal to the fears of insecurity that people have. But that's usually related to the border or crime, even though crime is going down. But it's never related to the climate, which is our most severe problem. How can we live in the world without destroying our environment? Those are the things that we need regulations for, and yet that's something that's not at all considered. Now, if we take a look at what their plan, what Project 2025 plan is for the unions, they'd like to strip the unions of basically any power that we have, so that the National Labor Relations Board, which is one of the few agencies that's set up to be of help to unions, that can help organize elections to find out whether the workers at a place want a union, that would be minimized. I think Trump has said on the first day he was in office, he would fire the main person in charge, the general counsel of the NLRB, because she's too progressive. It would eliminate many of the rules that currently exist. And what it would do, and I think this is really important, is it would allow the employer to set up basically its own phony unions. And so this really takes us back really 100 years in terms of the kinds of labor legislation that we've had. Now, I think most people haven't taken a look at Project 2025. After all, it's a huge project. And as I say, it's a wish list. So even if Trump and Vance were elected, it doesn't mean it would come into being. It would be certainly, it would seem to me, that there would be many, many demonstrations and meetings and challenges, legal and on the street, to oppose that kind of wish list. But it just shows what their plan is for us and how we have to develop an alternative that's based on securing people's rights and living in a society that is a communal society and not one where everybody feels like they're in line and they better beat the other person because there's only going to be so much food or housing or jobs to go around. No, that can't be our vision. Our vision must be one of solidarity, not just for our own family, but for the larger community and the larger environment in which we live.
Diane Feeley, we are sadly just about out of time, but tell us about the organization, one of them to which you belong, Solidarity, and about the publication Against the Current, which you help edit.
Thank you very much for mentioning that. So people can go to the website Against the Current and see our current and back issues and get a subscription if they'd like. They can go to this Solidarity-US website and look at the articles and ideas there. And we're actually running a series of classes on fascism, taking a look at history and today. And people can register for that. So thanks very much for having me on.
Thank you so much for joining us today, really, Diane Feeley. Thank you.
Thanks, Diane. It's been terrific talking to you.
If you have any comments or questions about this segment or any others, please visit us at lawanddisorder.org. That's lawanddisorder.org. One word, lawanddisorder.org.
And I thank our listeners for joining us here today on Law and Disorder, and I urge you all to visit our website, lawanddisorder.org. There you'll learn ways to support the show and spread the message of the show, and we'll appreciate that.
Hey, this is Mike Nelson, formerly of Mystery Science Theater 3000 until I got fired. You're listening to WRCT 88.3 FM, which is a heck of a lot better than having the top of your head sawed off and having vinegar poured in.
You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh. Welcome to our public affairs show for this week. Don Lennon in the spotlight.
Now, I'm not sure how much of it is satire, how much of it is real. Well, there's enough of it that's real that we're gonna talk about it. That people are regretting their vote. Are you tired yet? Are you wondering, like, wait, my relatives are being deported? Oh, wait a minute. What happened? Eggs are higher than when Joe Biden was in office. Wait, what do you mean? I can't get my Medicare? Like, wait, what? What is going on? What happened? I thought he was going to do a carve-out for me. That he was going to make an exception for me. What about me? And he didn't. And now you're an FAFO. Everyone from teachers to farmers to everyday people. Even some of the folks who just did not want to go back to work. Like, you supported Donald Trump, but you thought you'd be able to work from home. And then he's like, no, bring your ass back to work. Come into the office. And now you mad because of that. Why are you mad, bro? Why are you mad? Thank you, Jen Leonard. I will feel better soon. I just need to get more and more sleep. Thank you, Violet Ray. I appreciate it. Feel better. Take lemons. I will. I have lemons and I got some lemon tea right here. So thank you all. I really appreciate it. But we got some business to do this morning. So come on in, everyone. Where are you streaming from? Let me know. And let me know, do you care? Do you know anyone who's regretting their vote? Now, I'm sure some people are loving it, right? Because, oh, we're owning the libs and this is what we wanted. Whatever. It's not really what they want. They're going to tell you that. They're lying to you. Because I know some MAGA folks and they're like, wait a minute. What is all of this? I didn't expect all of this chaos. I thought everything was going to go down. And it hasn't. And it's about to go up. Especially with these tariffs. So do not get it twisted. Forget about the price of eggs, the price of houses. It's about to go through the roof. You thought that you couldn't afford the American dream. You thought that you couldn't afford the American dream. Wait till now. Wait till these tariffs on steel and metal and all of that, and aluminum, or as they say, aluminium, across the pond. Wait till these tariffs go in. And see if you were ever able to afford the American dream in the near or even far future. It's not going to happen. The price of houses is about to go through the roof. President Donald Trump has ordered a 25% import tax on all steel and aluminum entering the U.S. in a major expansion of existing trade barriers. The tariffs, which will increase the costs of importing the metals into the U.S., come despite warnings of retaliation from some political leaders in Canada, America's biggest supplier of metals, as well as other countries. It's not just Canada's like, we don't need you. We got our own syrup. We got our own metals. We got our own aluminum. You need ours. So do your thing, America, Trump. That's honestly what they're saying. All of this has prompted the trend on social media, hashtag MAGA regrets. Do you know some folks who are regretting? This is a mashup of tons of voters saying that they now regret voting for Donald Trump. Again, we don't know. Some of it may be satire, but we know that a lot of it is real because I have encountered some of these folks. But here it is. Watch.
In 2 weeks, I'm done. You want to talk about regretting your vote?
I never thought I'd say that, but I regret my vote. I voted for Trump.
I voted for Trump, and I regret it now.
I, as a Hispanic, I voted for Donald J. Trump. Dude, I regret it so much, man.
I am regretting my vote for Donald Trump.
I voted for Donald Trump, and now I regret it.
A lot of people who were like me voted for Trump and have to account for that.
I regret voting for Trump.
So deeply regret my vote for Donald Trump.
I regret voting for Trump.
I was a dumbass, voted for Trump. It was the worst decision I ever made.
I've seen the light, and I got out of MAGA. A lot of us there have seen the light. We have deep regrets.
I feel guilty because I voted for Trump twice. I feel very guilty because I feel responsible. That's why he's still running.
I was with Trump for 9 straight years. I'm disappointed. I'm very disappointed in Trump right now.
So Marie Maniscalco says, I work with some of them. I see no signs of regret yet. That's true. And we're going to tell you why. There are some who are not regretting, but there are some who are. And I think you can take them. The folks who are regretting, you have to welcome them in. Like the guy said to me, they welcomed him in to the Capitol for the insurrectionists. He actually believed that the police welcomed them in. So I think you have to meet people where they are. Yes. Yes. Aw, cry me a river, says Britt Wilson. Yes, they should face responsibility. They got themselves into this. They got all of us into this. Why did they vote for him? But KT Frey, they voted for him because they thought that he was going to actually lower the cost of goods, of groceries. And that is not happening. None of it is happening. All he's doing is what? Playing on the American people's emotions about issues that don't even really matter. Like changing the name of the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America. Just little things like that. There's a map. You can put it up, Andy. Change the name of the... So you think that he's doing something, right? Do you really care? Do you really care if he changes the name? Because someone can just go in and change it back. Do you really care? People are going to call it the Gulf of Mexico anyways. But he's doing it because he wants you to think that he's doing something, and he's just bombarding you with BS, 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 BS. I don't care how much they regret it, says Jay Jenkins. Well, you should care. You should care, and you should say, you know, I told you so, but come on in. Talk to me about why you regret it. Why do you regret it? Now, I think that the people who regret it most, quite honestly, are the teachers and the farmers. Because when you get rid of the Department of Education, and when you get rid of things that are going to help the farming industry in this country, that you actually make it harder in an industry that already has it the worst. Those folks don't take to it kindly. Here's farmers. These are farmers expressing their regret for MAGA.
Folks who aren't feeling Trump's optimism right now are American farmers, and they are stuck in the middle of all of this.
Frank, who did you vote for president?
Mr. Trump.
Right?
Trump.
Mr. Trump.
If the election were today, Frank, would you vote for Donald Trump?
No way.
Couldn't happen.
No.
You voted for President Trump. So now, in this moment, you say you're in a free fall. What is your message to him?
So I'm off the Trump train. Where I'm going for now is I got to protect my business.
Island, a wheat farmer who says he's lost $400,000 since Trump took office.
I think there was a lot of people who voted for him that want to stay loyal to him, but it's going to get to the point where financially, if it's between supporting the president or losing your family farm.
You voted for the president?
Yes, I did.
And do you support these policies which might be hurting farmers like you?
Right now, we're the ones that are taking the hit.
I think he's sort of backstabbing the main people who got him into office in the Midwest, and he just left us down.
So, yesterday, we put up on our channel, farmers, a farmer who regret, well, he didn't vote for Donald Trump, but he says that Donald Trump is betraying the farming industry. And some of the folks he speaks to, he said they're reluctant to admit it. He said, so if you can't regret and you don't believe that you FAFO'd, then can you at least, he says, admit that you were lied to? And they all admit that they were lied to. Because it's hard for people to get into their heads like, oh my God, I did something wrong. But now they're admitting at least that they're lied to. That's the first step, is acknowledgement. Now, this is the farmer we spoke to yesterday. His name is Will Westmoreland. Here he is.
I live in the middle of it. Almost every Saturday, I go have lunch with the same group of friends that I've had for years, and they all voted for Donald J. Trump. And I hear the same thing now, although I will say it's starting to change. The first cracks in the foundation are occurring. You heard the same thing before the election. Well, he's only going to deport the criminals. He's not going to do these things to farmers and ranchers. There was this deeply seated belief out there that it was all going to happen to somebody else, the people that deserved it. And now it's happening to us. And that was their biggest reason, I think, for trying to justify their vote. Well, now the chickens are coming home to roost. And what I tried to do in that video and what I'm pushing with my group, the Back 40, is I'm trying to say, while we're actively fighting against these policies that are bad for farmers and ranchers, we have to be willing to extend an olive branch to people like Skyler that say, I may have made the wrong decision, educate me on these topics. We've got to be willing to do that.
Skyler is a rancher that Will reached out to. Will saw Skyler online saying that folks were lying, that Donald Trump had nothing to do with Project 2025. He didn't believe it. And then Will got in touch with him and educated him on it. Because everything that Donald Trump is implementing comes from Project 2025. Even the bullshit stuff. That means nothing. That he's just throwing at you to distract you. The fact that these voters are regretting their vote shows that there is hope coming on in MAGA regrets. Join us to enforce the Constitution, says Jose Hernandez. Jose, thank you for your support of independent media. Yes. Look, I think these folks should be held accountable. But I think now that they're really finding out, perhaps they can help with this, with the constitutional crisis that we're in. Charisse Peoples, they voted for racism, Don, not eggs. Deportations, they did. You're 100% correct. Here's a TikToker saying, you made this bed, MAGA. Lay in it. Here it is.
I have a couple comments and a prediction on this MAGA regret thing that seems to be trending. First off, we told you so for years, what he's intending to do. We kept saying Project 2025, and you kept saying, no. We kept saying dictatorship, and you kept saying no. We kept saying he doesn't care about you. He just cares about your votes. And you kept saying, huh, he was joking. And a lot of you are realizing we were right. And then there's a lot of you who think that Donald Trump should give you an exception to what everybody else is going through because you voted for him. And you're thinking that Trump is going to make stipulations in executive orders because he's not going legislatively. This is all executive orders. That he's going to make a stipulation saying, well, if you voted for me, then this doesn't affect you. And therein lies my prediction that he'll toy with that idea.
Yeah, but he's never going to
perhaps even put in that rule. But then again, he just cared about their vote. He didn't really care about them.
He is never going to make, he's never going to make a stipulation. That's not what's happening here. He only cared about your vote. And so for the ones who are not regretting right now, because I know there are some of them who are not regretting and they think like, oh, this is daddy. And he's, they will, mark my words. But again, cry me a river. If you voted for the deportation, deporter in chief, and your family members are getting deported, then that's all on you. If you voted for cutting education funds and he's getting rid of the Department of Education and you're a teacher, that is all on you. Like this teacher in a red state, here's Luke Beasley. Watch.
States that most rely on federal funding for its public schools all voted for Trump.
I voted for President Trump.
You didn't vote for Trump eliminating federal funds.
No, I did not vote for that. I voted for President Trump to make America first again. I do not think that's what the voters want. It's devastating.
Do you know what getting rid of the Department of Education, getting rid of the mechanisms by which that support is delivered? It means it goes away. Trying to uplift states that are experiencing major either shortcomings, failures in governance, or just happen to be for systemic reasons, struggling more. No matter how much you may hate me, MAGA, I want you to get that extra support. But Trump wants to get rid of it, and it would be devastating. She's realizing how messed up this would be for her after voting for it. When you look at these women, I don't want to go, well, you're going to get what you voted for. No, even if she's actively enabling the problem, I want to push back against that problem. One of the most admirable jobs and so important. But we have to get through that you can't vote for the people saying they want to hurt you.
Well, they did, Luke Beasley. And now they regret it. At least the people who are living in the real world, like the people who are not teachers or not farmers, and they just think that they know what everybody wants, they're sitting around going, oh, I love this, I love this, I love this. But the people who are actually affected by it, the folks who know if you get rid of the Department of Education and folks are going to have to start paying for their schools and it's going to be school choice and all of that, then they know that public education is going away. So unless you are someone who is wealthy or well-to-do, upper middle class, you can afford maybe to send your kids to private school, you're going to be okay. But other than that, you got to pay. And let's not forget the price of those eggs that he was supposed to bring down in the first couple of days after he took office. And guess what? They skyrocketed for really the same reasons that they were high under President Joe Biden. It's a bird flu. But under Joe Biden, nobody believed the bird flu, smird flu. It's a fake birdemic. It's a flapdemic. It's not true. Joe Biden is lying. And now because Donald Trump is in office, oh yeah, well, he can't control the bird flu. People are so dumb. It's unbelievable. Now, this is how many people, you've heard black women say, you know what? I'm done with this. I'm sitting out. Don't ask me. This woman that I'm going to show, and it's a little bit humorous, but it's true. A lot of people in the country who really fought for the right things, who voted not just for themselves, but for their fellow men, for other people, not just selfishly. This is how they feel. They're just sitting back and watching this. Watch.
Voted for Trump because he promised while he was campaigning like a million times that when he got into office, he was going to bring down prices, bring down grocery prices. The inflation has been high ever since COVID, and he promised he would bring that down. But it's obvious to me now that that was not true. Egg prices have skyrocketed. The bird flu is killing all the birds, and he doesn't seem to be doing anything about that. He's stopping disease communications from the disease centers in America, pulled us out of the WHO. Like, how does that help anything? And yeah, all he's been doing is taking away rights and freedoms, or trying to. He's not doing anything about the economy. So yeah, we totally regret our vote at this point. We've had a really tough time here in North Carolina. Half of my house got washed away in Hurricane Helene, and I applied for FEMA assistance and we got approved. But now Trump is canceling FEMA and emergency assistance to people. He's also canceled Medicaid for my children. I know they said they put a halt on his freezing of the funds, but the Medicaid portal is still not working, so we can't access.
That's some real stuff. Now, we're not laughing at people being hurt. We're not laughing at the folks who are in the storm zone, in the hurricane zone, because those folks are really hurting. But you voted for this because you thought that you were owning the libs and you believed the lies. You believed the lies that come out of his mouth every single day. How could you, after 10 years of him being in the political spotlight, that you could do it? And now you're saying he's hurting my family. Other families have been saying that forever. Black families, the Central Park Five, been saying, hey, look, he wanted to unalive us. And you still voted for him. And not until it affects your family, now all of a sudden you're crying about it? And especially those who are, I have no respect, honestly, for anyone who does not understand the contributions and the sacrifices that African Americans, black folks, have made for this country. And also in helping women of all ethnicities with their rights, of helping all other ethnicities through the Civil Rights Act and the Civil Rights Movement. And then all of a sudden you get into the country, you become a citizen, you gain a little bit of money or wealth or ease in society. And then all of a sudden you forget about the people who actually helped you. Vivek, Nikki. Because without us, you would not be where you are. Latinos who voted for Trump. Just think, if African Americans had not made the sacrifices, where you would be. And then you just forget about black people and you forget about the people who helped you. Here's a man on Latino MAGA. Regret. Watch.
Latinos for Trump literally in tears because ICE is picking up their family members saying that Trump betrayed them. No, Trump didn't lie to you. You lied to you. Can somebody tell me a single nice thing Trump has ever said about Latinos? I never recall this dude saying, you know, we love the Mexicans, don't we? So hardworking, so intelligent, they're bringing the best, said Trump.
Never. Pause, please, Andy. He didn't lie to you. You lied to you. Andy, do you have the clip of what he said about Latinos? Let's show. This is how he feels about you, yet you supported him. Watch.
When do we beat Mexico at the border? They're laughing at us, at our stupidity. And now they're beating us economically. They are not our friend, believe me. And these are the best and the finest. When Mexico sends its people, they're not sending their best. They're not sending you. They're not sending you. They're sending people that have lots of problems, and they're bringing those problems with us. They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists. And some, I assume, are good people. But I speak to border guards, and they tell us what we're getting. And it only makes common sense. It only makes common sense.
Okay, there you go.
Yes.
So he says they're bringing drugs, they're bringing crimes, they're rapists. Some, I assume, are good people. And you voted for him. And now He's deporting your family members. Can we go back to the man? Can we pick up the man where he was? Is that possible? Because, yeah. Because he didn't lie to you. You lied to you. Dearborn, Michigan. He didn't lie to you. You lied to you. I have every sorrow. I feel bad for the people, what's happening in Gaza and Palestine. But he told you where his loyalties lied. And that was not with the folks in Gaza. It was with Bibi Netanyahu. I'm just saying, roll the tape.
In fact, white MAGA is calling La Migra on brown MAGA, but Trump didn't lie. Your desire for adjacency to whiteness was the deceiver. These F around and find out stories are abounding, and we ain't even 2 weeks in yet. You got the Fraternal Order of Police upset at Trump because he released January Sixers. Trump didn't lie to you. You lied to
you. Lied to
Trump's credit. He never said he wasn't going to let them people out. Red State farmers mad at Trump because nobody is there to pick the produce off the vine. Trump didn't lie to you. You lied to you. Trump told you good and damn well what he was going to do with the migrants. The self-deception was falling for them white supremacist dog whistles and letting them trick you into thinking that brown folks was your problem in this country. No, no, no. It's always been wealthy white men. Most asinine groups is the black MAGA voters who also believe in reparations. And they actually asked me because of my proximity to Bobby Kennedy, do you think that this administration would have a hearing on reparations? And I'm like, nah, man.
No.
These same people act like they don't mind DEI going away because reparations is what we need. I'm like, dude, DEI is the canary in the coal mine to reparations.
There you go.
You know this? You got to be politically astute enough to...
You got to be politically astute enough to understand. They don't care about you. All of that protest voting and, oh my gosh, it's not, I can't believe that, you know, Harris is doing this and Biden didn't do this and blah, blah, blah. And what about this? And Jill Stein. And it's like, oh my God, give me a break. You were idiots. Yeah, I said it. It was the dumbest thing that you could have done because look where you are now. I hate to laugh, but it's your fault. This gentleman is right. He didn't lie to you. You lied to you. Now, I don't want anyone to not feed their family, to lose their homes or their jobs, or not to be able to send their kids to school. But he told you. So all of those people who are regretting, that is your own fault. And guess what? There are some, for the folks who are regretting, because there are a lot of people who are regretting, even your own MAGA folks are laughing at you because they don't care. They're happy about it. Nathan June says, MAGA doesn't actually regret anything. That's what he says. Watch.
I don't know who needs to hear this, but there are very few MAGA people who actually regret voting for Trump right now. Yeah, groceries aren't any cheaper. They don't care. I promise you they don't care. Because what they actually care about is DEI programs ending. What they actually care about is controlling women's bodies. What they actually care about is 40 trans athletes not being able to play field hockey in Division II anymore.
40.
What they actually care about is forcing prayer in schools. So yeah, it's fun to see these videos where like, a handful of people are saying that they regret their choice because it directly impacts them, but it's not the case. Almost half of the executive orders that Trump has signed in his first 2 weeks are about equal rights, human rights, and forcing Christianity on Americans.
Mm-hmm.
It was never about groceries, and it was never about eggs, because if it was about eggs, he would be trying to fix the eggs problem.
And he's not, because he can't, and he never could. Now, I believe, look, doing my own research, it's more than a handful of people. That's where I don't agree with him on. Now we're all suffering except the super wealthy, says Miss A. Renee Moore. You're right. The super wealthy is not suffering. We're going to hear from some of the folks like Elizabeth Warren and folks about the super wealthy in just a bit. Now, think about this. Now, I want you to imagine if everything that's happening now, and I've done this a little experiment with you guys before. If everything that's happening now, if there was a Democrat in office, and then there was George Soros, and George Soros had an office of the Department of Government Oversight or Waste or whatever it is, and he was calling the shots and firing people and getting rid of money and freezing it or whatever. How would the Republicans feel? This is a dictatorship. Oh, my God, we can't do it. Joe Biden is doing it. Barack Obama, Kamala Harris, what are they doing? George Soros, devil. But they're okay with it. They're okay with a dictatorship. Did you hear what I said? Now, this is America. It's a democracy. It's a republic. But do you think Americans, especially Republicans or conservatives, do you think they would be okay with a dictatorship? You know, a constitution. You know, God doesn't make kings. You know the reason that we left England. Do you think that MAGA would be okay with a dictatorship? Well, here's your answer. Watch.
Do you rather have 4 years of Donald Trump as a dictator or 4 years of President Biden reelected?
You know, you don't have to like the words that come out of the man's mouth, but sometimes in life we all need a good paddling from the principal to set our life on the right track, and this country does need a little bit of that. We need a little paddling. I mean, I was a problem child growing up, and it took a good leadership to set me straight. So I think our country does need some of that. So I hands down believe people wanted it 4 years ago, 3 years ago. So,
but they didn't vote that way, right?
I don't know about that.
You think it was a stolen election?
Without a doubt.
The other day, Donald Trump said on his first day he's going to be a dictator for a day.
I like that. Yeah, I like that.
Would you rather have Donald Trump as a dictator for 4 years or reelect Joe Biden for 4 years?
I would rather have Donald Trump. I'd like to see the repeal of the Roosevelt Law so that he can be a president for a lot more than 4 years. But this country needs a dictator. I hate to say that, but it's the truth.
Donald Trump said in a speech that on day one, for a day, he would be a dictator. What do you think of that?
No idea. I don't know.
Would you rather have 4 years of Donald Trump as a dictator or 4 years of Joe Biden as a president?
Trump.
As a dictator?
Maybe.
Would you rather have four
okay,
years
we get of it. We get Donald it. Trump? We get it. The MAGA brains. Do you think those people actually know what's going on? Look, that farmer did a really great job yesterday explaining the 40 years. The 40 years of conservative talk, right-wing radio, conservative media, just pumping it into people's minds that you can't trust the mainstream media, that the Democrats are devils and give it feeding misinformation, and now it's an echo chamber, and now it has all come together, and that's how Donald Trump gets elected. From misinformation and, quite frankly, from ignorance. And people don't know that they're being manipulated. And so they end up like that in America, which is a democracy, saying that they're okay with a dictator and that he should be able to run more than twice, that he should serve more than two terms, which means getting rid of the Constitution. And so when people like me tell you the truth that that's not what our Constitution says, we should never want a dictatorship, then they make you think that I'm somehow giving misinformation because they are brainwashed and it is a cult. It is a cult. That's why whoever just said in the chat, he loves the poorly educated, because the rich folks, they know. The rich folks support him because he's making them richer. They're paying fewer taxes, less taxes than what? Than the poor in this country. Than the poor in this country. Percentage-wise, they're paying less. Now, you would think a billionaire who has ample, just, you know what they say, when people say F you money, Don't you think they should be paying more? Even percentage-wise? Because they have more to give. They have more disposable income. They can buy... Look, if you have enough money to buy one plane, one private jet, then you should be paying more. If you have enough to buy more than one private, then you should be paying more. I mean, why? How much do you need? But those folks, they know the real deal because they're smart. They know I'm voting for this man because of my taxes. In the meantime, you're fighting about social issues and DEI that you don't even know the definition of. You don't even understand the definition of DEI. You don't understand that it helps veterans, that it helps disabled people, that it helps women. You don't understand that. Just little things like things where a woman can go into a private room and breastfeed and or pump milk, or any of those things. Or veterans have equal access to the job market. Or disabled people can get a ramp so that they can get to work. Just little things. And you think it's all because, like, you think it's about black people who are not deserving of your jobs, who are less qualified than you, and they're stealing your jobs. That's what you think it is. That's what they want you to think it is, because they want to keep you fighting. And you have fallen for it with your stupid MAGA brain. Because you are in a cult and it makes you feel like you belong to something. It makes you feel, you're welcome, Nicole Luongo. Thank you for mentioning disabled people like me. And anyone else who knows who other, what DEI does, who it actually helps, put it in the chat and we'll educate you. But because you want to belong to something. It makes you feel like you're part of the club. They don't care about anything other than the ability to be hateful, says Brittany SF. In the meantime, Donald Trump is still going around saying that the election results are not true, even though he won. He still doesn't believe that they're true, except for him. So if the election results are not true, then maybe he actually did not get the votes. Maybe folks are right. They're saying that Elon Musk tampered. That's what people are saying, right? You've heard it. That there was some tampering with the votes electronically. Well, this is what he said in an interview. Listen, I want you to listen closely and tell me if this makes sense.
They really do. You won the popular vote. You won all the swing states. But still, Kamala Harris got 75 million votes in the country.
Well, if you believe the whole thing.
Okay, let's just say.
It is ridiculous.
That the election was as it was.
Excuse me. There are seven swing states. I won them all.
You did.
By a lot.
But let me just get to the dismount here.
And I won the popular.
Have you thought about how to try to bring the country together, to reach out or to find common ground? Have you thought about that? Or
can you imagine how tiny this person's self-esteem is? To always be so constantly obsessed with numbers and who got the most or whatever. So if it was not accurate, then perhaps his votes are not accurate. So what he's saying doesn't make sense. So shouldn't he be saying, like, look, yeah, I won fair and square. This is a free and fair election, but yet and still he just can't admit it. That the election was within 1% or whatever, a very tiny percentage of the vote. He will tell you it's a mandated landslide. It was not a landslide. So Donald Trump is still lying to people. Still lying. Putting us into a what? Right now, we are in a constitutional crisis, and I have been telling you this, and it's all based on lies and that Donald Trump and this administration, they don't give a damn about the Constitution. Neither do they care about the rule of law. I think Democrats have finally gotten it, but I think it may be a little bit too late because there's not much that they can do. Elizabeth Warren.
Isn't actually the guy who puts in the orders and cuts people's paychecks. There's somebody else in the system who does that. And they're a click down from Donald Trump and a click down from that and a click down from that. And when a federal court issues an order and then gets people in front of them and says, you either follow that order or find yourself in contempt, Now we're going to see whether or not those are people who are going to say, oh, but Donald Trump told me, and a judge is going to say, I don't care what Donald Trump told you. I'm telling you what the law is. You follow the law. And, you know, my view right now is the courts are where we are hanging on to our constitutional structure. They still have the power to hold everybody else in this country in contempt if they do not follow lawfully issued court orders.
Except, Elizabeth Warren, maybe in a state court, and that will hold true, but not in federal court where most of this will take place. They are really immune. There are no consequences. I hate to be Donnie Downer, but let me just tell you, Donald Trump will say, I'm acting in the official capacity as president. The Supreme Court granted me that right. And if you prosecute anyone that I give orders to, I'm just going to pardon them. And they are not going to suffer any consequences. And I'm going to bring them back and I'm going to keep them in the government. That, my dears, that is a constitutional crisis. And we are in one right now. So what do we do? I don't know. Elizabeth Warren is hanging her hat on the courts. Good luck. Because we see what happens with the courts now. You know what's happening with the courts? Governor Rod Blagojevich. All of it wiped away. Donald Trump. Pardon him. I believe it's a pardon, right? Am I correct, producers? It's a pardon. Eric Adams. Donald Trump's Justice Department has ordered the courts in New York, the federal courts, to drop all of the charges against who? Eric Adams. Department of Justice. Can we call the Department of Justice? Someone says in the chat, you can call them. I don't know if it's going to make a difference. I'm just being honest with you guys. I don't know. And here's something else that will happen. Because there's breaking news coming out. It says Steve Bannon pleads guilty in New York. We build a wall case. So you remember that whole case with Steve Bannon where they said that it was fraudulent. He actually served time. Steve Bannon, a longtime ally of President Donald Trump, pleaded guilty on Tuesday on a fraud charge in a case alleging he helped defraud donors who were giving money to build a wall at the southern U.S. border. In exchange for a guilty plea, he agreed to a conditional discharge and waived his right to appeal. Bannon was sentenced to 3 years conditional discharge. He will not be allowed to serve as an officer or a director of a charity or any charitable organization in New York State or any fundraising or not-for-profit organization in New York State. This is state court, so Donald Trump doesn't have jurisdiction. He will not be allowed to receive or hold assets for any charitable organizations. He was originally charged in an indictment with 6 counts of money laundering, conspiracy, and a scheme to defraud. So Steve Bannon in state court couldn't save him from that. So maybe in these state courts, Elizabeth Warren is right. But in federal court, nope, they are lawless. Dorothy Taylor. Dorothy, why aren't you a member? You should be a member. Eric Adams will now kiss his boots and ring as well. So Eric Adams, not suffering any consequences. Rod Blagojevich, he's already paid somewhat because he went to jail. Because he went to jail. George Conway. You guys know George Conway. Kellyanne Conway's ex-husband, who is a never-Trumper, has never liked Donald Trump. Even when his wife was trying to elect him, he was quiet then back during the campaign. And then afterwards, he's like, I've had enough of this. And then they got a divorce. Here's George Conway talking about the constitutional crisis and what the courts should be doing and are not. Here it is.
This is, you know, the only recourse will be for people to get out and say, we want the rule of law. We want a government that obeys the law.
Pause.
And that's going to require people to go out.
Did you guys hear what I said yesterday and I've been saying all along that you need to take it to the streets? Sounds like George Conway is saying exactly what we said. Let's hear him out. Here it is.
That's going to require people to go out on the streets because that is there is no other alternative. It's telling us something that we should have already known. And last week I said it. They are not going to obey court orders. They have decided that they are going to push the boundaries on executive power by basically infringing on the Article 1 power of Congress. And they are violating statutory, they're violating the Constitution, the text of the Constitution in the birthright citizenship issue. They are violating the text of statutes by having DOGE run around and do all the things that they've been doing, these executive orders. There's no reason that this